Joining us here at the First Alert Desk on Atlanta News First Plus for another installment of Decatur Dish as we get into some of DeKalb County's top headlines. First of all, I'd like to start this Tuesday off by asking you, how you been?
I've been good. I bet you at this point DeKalb County only hopes there's one of me, as opposed to multiple, because I've been griefing DeKalb watershed hourly for a while. Tends to happen when you don't have that thing that the kids really like nowadays. It's called water. It kind of makes things happen, like, you know, showers and having your clothes washed and all that fun stuff. So it's been a week and it's only Tuesday.
It's fun talking to you because you are not only DeKalb County's community journalist, but you're also a DeKalb County resident. So you're often impacted by the stories you tell. And that is one of our top headlines here that we're going to get into. That water main break that Dan just mentioned on McClendon Drive is actively in repair and crews are working around the clock. We'll get into that in just a moment. The superintendent's contract extended. Good news for DeKalb County's school board. We will let you know. And Stone Mountain Business is accusing CSX Transportation of forcing them out, forcing them to vacate. And of course, the topic of episode 22 of Decatur Dish, if you were with us, Kirkwood and Pullman Yards, we have a council member, Liliana Bakhtiari, joining us here to get into that and some of the other issues facing District 5. But first, Dan, you started this off, the water main break issue that started yesterday, continues into today. What can you tell us?
Oh, gather around and I shall tell you a tale. Sunday night, 10 o'clock, we're all getting ready to start our work week. Turn the faucet on and the water's coming out. That is usually not a portent of anything good in DeKalb County. I called Watershed. Watershed said, there's a main break. I said, you don't say. They said somebody's out there fixing it. I drove up and down McClendon. I don't see any trucks. I don't see any Watershed crews. Saw a lot of water. Saw a lot of water on the road. Didn't see a lot of people investigating the source of that water. Found out from our media partners at Atlanta News First that there was also a break going on in a Chamblee, Dunwoody area. So DeKalb County Watershed's putting out a lot of fires, obviously. They've got stuff that they're actively repairing. So we called Watershed. They said, we're looking into it. We'll get it fixed. I didn't see any trucks or anything until Monday evening. The communication was basically non-existent. We had to basically hound the county for a long time to get. And you have to understand, I'm a news reporter, but I'm also a resident who's directly affected by this. So if there's a little edge to my voice on it, it's because I haven't been able to take a shower in my own house for a few days, and it's annoying. It's also the second time this year that that's happened. If you recall, back in February, we had a very similar situation. So DeKalb Watershed finally gets a truck out there, I believe, Monday evening. They're still working on it. For whatever reason, Maria, and I don't know the answer to this, when Mike Thurman became CEO, fixing Watershed and the issues around water billing was his top priority. Mm-hmm. There's a huge communication strategy around that. And for whatever reason, maybe it's because Michael Thurman's on the way out and people are looking for other jobs, I don't know, communication has just fallen off of a cliff. And we have a really hard time in the media of getting information about really basic stuff like, where's the water main break? When will the water main break be fixed? Today, they just turned on all the hydrants. So there's hydrants on our street, gushing water. We don't know why the county did this. Maybe they want us to bring buckets out to replenish the water that was in our house. Maybe they want us to play in the hydrants to alleviate stress. I don't know. They don't tell us these things. So I've been on the phone with Watershed quite a bit, both as a resident and as a journalist. I'm having to wear both of those hats, trying to figure out, what are we doing here, guys? What's going on? When it happened in February, I said, you know what? This happens to everyone in DeKalb County. It's just our turn. It's going to happen to us eventually. Now I'm just like, okay, what karmic thing am I getting repaid on here? Because I know I've done something either in this life and a past life that is accounting for this. So I'm just trying to, like, you know, make amends, burn incense, whatever I have to do. Because two of these is really stressful. I don't know how I'm going to feel about three. I sure as hell hope three does not happen. But, you never know. It's DeKalb County. It's always an adventure. I'm hoping we'll have some resolution to it sometime. Whenever.
I will say.
They get around to
it. When the water goes, community members, they get real vocal real quick. So yeah. I'm sure they appreciate you taking the initiative to get some answers for them.
Yeah.
Moving on to some of our other topics. This one surrounding the DeKalb County School Board Superintendent, Devin Horton, getting an extension on his contract. It seems to be here to stay at least for a little while longer, right?
Yeah, 2 years. So he had a 2-year option. They exercised that. I think he didn't get a raise, which I think is an important point. Because normally when they do a contract extension, there's usually a raise. So my assumption, this is just me reading the tea leaves here, I think Dr. Horton probably wanted some more assurances that his job was going to be safe and secure before our new board came along. So I think that's what's going on there.
And getting into some of the other stories that we're following, this one out of Stone Mountain, a business claiming that CSX Transportation is forcing them to vacate. I think it had a lot of people scratching their heads.
What caused it was money. That was the long and short of it. CSX owns this property on Main Street. They've been charging people $500 a month for years. They probably didn't even know this was on their books. And they started digging around and they're like, wait a second, we've got property that people are paying $500 a month for. We should get more. And they go to the property owner. He's like, well, you see, I also may have subleased this out to other people. And CSX said, you did what now? So that's really what's happened. CSX has finally gotten around to cleaning up its books on some of this stuff. And they started to realize that things may have happened while somebody was not minding the store. And so now they're trying to work through a pretty awkward situation because CSX contends that that property should not have been subleased.
The topic of episode 22 was, of course, Kirkwood and Pullman Yards surrounding the Sweetwater 420 Fest. It was just top of mind for a lot of people ahead of the weekend and into the weekend, and now continues to be a topic of conversation. We're, of course, continuing to follow that here at Atlanta News First Plus. And actually have a video for you of really when we talk about tensions, what it all exploded into. I'll let you take a look at the video. It really speaks for itself.
And here to put that video in context, we have Adam Rosenfeld's anger translator, Atlanta City Councilperson Liliana Bakhtiari. Councilperson Bakhtiari, how are you today?
Doing quite well. How are you, Dan?
I can't complain. So, not to sound like Jerry Seinfeld here, but what is the deal with Pullman Yard? Why are people so mad about what is going on over there? Give me the quick view.
I would say there's been a lot of frustration in terms of people feeling that they do not understand what the space has become. There was an idea that of what the space was meant to be, but prior to me coming on council, a landmark designation was given. People worked with the city and with Pullman Yards to come up with what that designation landmark meant. A lot of neighbors feel that there's been mission creep from that original purpose of that everyone coming together, and now it's a massive event space. People are upset by the congestion, the noise. They're worried about first responders being able to get through, and they just don't feel like Pullman is overall a good neighbor.
Neighbors are very mad, and I grief people professionally for a living. I hound public officials for answers, and I gotta say. Yeah, I gotta say, hats off to the Pullman Yard neighbors because they are grieving at a scale I've never seen before. It's impressive. They were going to do a volunteer drone army at one point, and I guess they got talked out of that. But even on Saturday, you know, we had Sweetwater 420 Fest, yep. big event. Apparently, by all accounts, it went off more or less without a hitch, right?
More or less. The traffic, I was out there myself, so traffic had greatly improved. We had a number of officers out on site directing traffic. There was about 13 to 15 parking attendants that were out on site. I went out not with the intention of directing traffic, but to be on site to assist. I ended up directing traffic. They had a number of employees on site, and the neighborhood actually did a very good job of also driving around, ensuring that people were getting water, just checking on things. And we really worked hard to make sure that the soccer fields and everybody else had direct communication and direct lines to the lead security officer for Pullman for the event.
It does take a village. It does take a village to direct traffic. So we're grateful that you're out there providing an assist. Mm-hmm. So I think the thing that comes up the most in these discussions around Pullman is, why is Pullman different than, say, another part of the city. And I saw some emails. Mm-hmm. We did a records request on this. And one of the examples that was brought up was Chastain Park, which is over in Buckhead, which is interesting because I thought of that too.
Right.
And I said, okay, Chastain Park is a venue, but I don't think they've got to get permits to do concerts. I think they're already zoned to do that. Am I correct on that?
I believe that they're zoned to do that. They do cut off their event at 11 p.m. Sometimes they go over, but there's good communication, from my understanding, from the representative of that area with the people that operate Chastain, and they've done a really good job of containing noise, and they also have a contract where they also do cleanups after their events. So neighbors also make money off of, you know, people parking in their own yard. They take people down, so they've really found a way to balance their operations in partnership with the neighborhood, from everything I've understood and all the research I have done in trying to understand why it works there, but why we haven't gotten it to work yet over at Pullman.
Yeah, they do big shows at Chastain. Mm-hmm. I've been to a few of them. So what is the procedure if Adam Rosenfeld, Pullman Yard, mm-hmm. want to host an event? Do they have to get a permit for that? What do they have to do?
This is the part that gets very confusing. So I don't want to put it entirely on Pullman, because it's also the responsibility of the city. And so the response the city consistently gives is that they do not need permits because it's on private property. And there is a lot of misunderstandings around this. I'll be very honest that I fully do not understand the permitting process and how the landmark designation works in collaboration with all of that, which is why we finally got the administration to agree to a working group with the neighborhood. We're working with the Kirkwood Neighborhood Organization. Matthew George, the president, has been incredible to work with. And he's putting together a list of 9 to 10 individuals, no more than that, to start meeting with the administration and different departments to begin working through these issues and getting questions answered. Because I'll be honest, I have been, as the elected for this district, I can't even get answers to certain questions on how permitting works. And that's not me exaggerating. That's not me lying. And so I cannot imagine how frustrating it is for the residents. But again, I want to be very clear that that's less on Pullman and more on the city. We have to do a better job. And this working group is my hopes that we will finally close those silos and start working towards progress, because the neighbors need answers, because we haven't been supplying them.
I've seen the email, so I believe you that you've been trying to get answers and haven't been very successful. So this working group, have they met yet? Are they going to meet? It sounds like there's a path forward.
The idea is that we will be making an announcement either this week or next. We will put everybody, will connect the administration with those, with Matthew, who will be taking lead as the president of KNO. We'll set those meetings, and my hope is that they will either start next week or the week after. So I'm talking, you know, end of April, beginning of May, to begin working through these issues to get answers on how we can ensure that we're getting the correct answers on the permitting process, on the noise ordinance, on traffic congestion, and finding out what works best for the site.
So we put the question out on the Kirkwood mm-hmm. Facebook group. Hi, Kirkwood Facebook group. And we said, what questions do you want us to ask Councilmember Bakhtiari? And one of the questions we got was, hey, Adam Rosenfeld, owner of Pullman Yards, gave a campaign contribution to you, I believe, back when you ran a few years ago.
Yep.
What is your response to that? Do you have any comment on that? Do you plan to give that back? I assume the money's been spent, but...
Yeah, I'll be very honest. The money's been spent. So all of the money that I raised during the campaign got spent. So I raised around $350,000, which is an insane amount of money for a race. There were 5 candidates. It was an open seat. Races have become increasingly expensive in the city. Atomic gave me a $2,800 check. That is not a secret. I filed it. Open disclosure. When you are running for office... When I was running for office, and when candidates run for office, every dollar earned is another voter reached. I understand now in hindsight people are very upset by that. Was not my intention. I was calling everyone for money. I put in 10 hours of call time a week. I door knocked over 30,000 doors. I was doing everything I could to fundraise. And all of that money went towards reaching voters, towards community events, towards paying my staff, and ensuring that I was paying our canvassers well above $15 an hour, trying to make sure that and giving everybody bonuses and making sure that people were taken care of. And some of that money actually even went towards sponsoring community events and et cetera. So if there is an ask for me to return money, I mean, I can give it back. It's been spent. But I also want to make it very abundantly clear, $2,800 by no means would ever buy me off to do anything that would cause me to play favorites or anything of that nature. There's a reason I disclose the money. There's a reason I'm open about it. But when you're running for office, ask any candidate, you're calling everywhere for funds. Will I be doing that in the future? No, because it's clearly a conflict of interest for the neighborhood and the community. Today is different from when I first ran. But that is why I accepted the money. That is what it was put towards. It's been spent. It's not still sitting in a bank account. But I'm happy to meet with the neighborhood about that if that is one of their concerns.
You know, Councilmember, I've been following your political career since the first time you ran against Councilmember Archibong two cycles ago.
2017, different
2017,
time.
Right. And you almost won. That was what I remember about it. So I've been following your career for a long time. And you were elected this time around. You had to go through a runoff. It was obviously a long, intense process. Let's talk about another tough subject, which is Cop City, the Atlanta Police Training Center, whatever you want to call that.
Yeah.
I was really struck. So there was a, and I can't remember for the life of me when the city council meeting was, but it was a long, I mean, the thing went until 6 a.m.
Our 17-hour public commentary that we had, yeah.
Yeah, it was something. I mean, last hats summer. Off to the journalist who stayed there. Mm-hmm. And it was raucous. It was as emotional as I've ever seen a public meeting get. I was watching it online. But something happened there where they took a recess, and you have sort of taken on the voice of the people who are upset about this thing. Mm-hmm. And you, I don't think you realize the cameras were on, but a lot of people commented on it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you said that struck me at the time was, look, I get it. I'm a part of the system that you hate. Can you tell me a little bit more about that moment and kind of what you were thinking in that moment, especially as it pertains to the Public Safety Training Center?
It was that day, and that public comment was, I mean, it was unbelievably difficult. What ended up happening was we had a bunch of people come in to give public comment about, you know, because we were voting through the funding for, and I had already, for the training facility, I'd already voted it down in finance. This is when it came to full council for a vote. Public comment was ended up being 17 hours long. I didn't get home until 6 a.m. the following day. What ended up happening was people were speaking. It was getting it was getting later. People were getting more upset. AC wasn't working. People were really hot. Temperatures were at an all-time high. And I started hearing my colleagues say that they wanted to pull a security measure and basically go to finish the meeting behind closed doors and kick the public out. You can imagine that in that moment, what that would have done. I believe there. I have no doubt that there would have been a full-blown riot. I didn't think it was the right choice. I knew it was going to be incredibly dangerous. I didn't know what to do. I had found that out. And like and some of my colleagues texted saying, hey, this is about to happen. Can you help? And I immediately motioned for us to go into a recess because it was just about to happen. I asked for 10 minutes and I didn't know what I was going to do, but I essentially walked into the audience and someone handed me a mic. They're like, people can't hear you. They handed me the mic and I had no idea that we were still rolling. And I just started talking to the public and being like, look, this is what's about to happen. My colleagues, I'm not sitting here condoning it. I'm not going against it. I am telling you the facts because you deserve to know. I want to be honest with you so that you can make your own choices and have your own autonomy. But they are about to declare a state of emergency and go behind closed doors and kick everyone out. And I do not want that to happen. And they're saying it's because of the behavior in here. I am not telling you to behave. I am not telling you how to act. I am simply saying that this is what's about to occur. I don't think it's right. And I want you to understand what's happening so that you can make a decision to the best of your ability about what you'd like to do. And, you know, there was people were yelling at me. People were also saying thank you. But there was people were demanding to know why that would happen. I explained that a lot of folks were scared because of the death threats that came in. Some people heckled and said, show us receipts. But basically what ended up occurring was we had a dialogue. People were like, how could you ask us to behave? And I was like, look, I understand that you don't have a reason to trust me because I am part of a system that you despise. Even though the public asked me to run, even though I'm doing the best I can to advocate for my district, which it was the district that was the majority against the site and the project, and I have to speak on behalf of my district, I understand all of that, but I'm just trying to be honest with you about what is about to occur so that you can make the best decision for yourselves.
It was something.
I hysterically cried for about half an hour before I pulled it back together and came back in.
One of the more, and I've been watching stuff going on in this town for over a decade now, and I I will remember that for a lot of reasons. It was a moment for sure. We're going to have to get on to the next topic, and then we're going to be up on time. Affordable housing is something that you're passionate about. It's something editorially Decaturish is passionate about.
Yep.
What is the state of affordable housing in your district, and what are the opportunities there?
We have a lot more for. We're building in a 20 to 25,000 unit deficit a year, and I'm not even talking about affordability at this point. And you know, not the previous administration, but the administration before that really gutted the Atlanta housing and Integral, and really did a lot of damage to the affordable housing market and the numbers that Atlanta was achieving up until that point. What we are doing now, however, is I'm trying to launch a lot of initiatives. So we're preempted by the state on rent control, on a number of things that could, on tenant bill of rights and things that can advocate for the tenant. So I am trying to find ways to have community partnerships to go around the state preemption. So starting an access to counsel program with the Atlanta Volunteer Lawyer Foundation to get people free access to lawyers to fight evictions. We're about to start a door knocking program in Reynoldstown as a pilot to go door knock on seniors' doors to find out, to meet them where they are, to find out what threats they're facing so we can connect them to services. I'm trying very hard to create opportunities with the land trust. We're trying to create pilots there where people can basically sell their land but own their house to keep their property permanently affordable to lower their property taxes. My first year on council, we did the Section 8 housing vouchers. Basically had to go to every development agency and got them to adopt a policy that if anybody came to them for public dollars, that they would have to register with Atlanta Housing and accept housing vouchers. So these are a few of the things, and doing a lot. We have 5 permanent supportive housing projects coming online in this district this year and next year. So that's also going to make a dent. But there's still a lot more to do. And I'm hoping that that public and private partnerships that we started in this district will be scaled citywide to begin tackling this issue. But we have a long way to go.
One of the things that I find in my work is that the people who are the most publicly for affordable housing also tend to be the kind of people who say, but not in my backyard.
Yeah.
Put that. How do you navigate that in your work? How do you navigate that conflict?
What I have found is that the typical MO of council has been, hey, let the neighborhood decide and then you can bring it to me. And I have found that if we are really going to advance affordable housing and not feed into the culture of NIMBYism versus YIMBYism and people calling each other names and there being a massive divide in the community, I have to go in and have those conversations. So I have involved myself more than other council members do, because this is where rubber meets road and the hard talks happen. And the biggest obstacle to affordable housing is also the culture and the community's fear of density, because intentional density and planning is not really happening. And basically, many people feel that developers are finding any plot of land they can to throw up McMansions. Like, that is me paraphrasing. That is not my view. I'm just saying this is what folks feel. And in some instances, that is true. But if we're going to change the culture and have neighborhoods advocate for themselves to know how to bring housing into their community and understanding the way the market works, I have to get in there. I have to provide resources. I have to help with education. I need to help with mediating the conversation. We've done this for a few different projects now. And I am trying to educate constituents on what the challenges are with affordability, why we have the HUD formula, the city doesn't have a say in what area media income is and how that's dictated by federal, by HUD, which comes down from our federal government.
And we're going to have to stick a pin in it right there.
Yep.
We are running out of time.
We are.
But council member, thank you so much for joining us. I think this is an important conversation.
Yeah.
I hope you'll join us again. We can keep having this conversation. This is the Decatur Dish Show. Mm-hmm. We air on Atlanta News First Plus every Tuesday at 12:30. You can download the Atlanta News First Plus app to catch the episodes there, see previous episodes. I am Dan Wisenhunt. I'm editor and publisher of Decaturish.com, local news website serving DeKalb County, Georgia. You can find out more about us over on Decaturish.com. Until then, we will see you next Tuesday.
Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you, Dan.